Hello and welcome to Mastering Education, a podcast all about helping students learn better. Through interviews with students, experts and educators from GCSE to PhD, we've got you covered. Today, I'm obviously very happy to have my co-host back into the studio, Tane, whose birthday it was yesterday.
Was indeed.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Where did you go? What did you do?
So I was out in London with my girlfriend and my family, did a little bit of shopping, stationery shopping actually.
Cool.
And then went to the Shard for a lovely meal.
Fantastic. Well, it's not going to be as good as this meal.
Wow.
Of Ferrero Rocher's.
Amazing.
Happy birthday.
Oh, the Shard can't compete with this at all.
It can't. No, that's luxury. That's luxury. Amazing. So if we really want, we can make this a weird ASMR podcast where we just nibble into the microphone.
I won't make them listen to that. No,
but happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
And I'm delighted to have someone who I think really embodies the spirit of what mastering education is all about, which is someone who has really excelled through all the parts of their learning. And I'm very pleased to welcome into the studio, Amelia. Thank you so much for joining us. So Amelia got 13 A stars at GCSE, 4 A stars at A level, and a first degree from Oxford, which is like your dream, isn't it? We spent a long time talking about Oxford last episode.
Unbelievable. It's like,
so
a
now you've got like God in front of you.
Yeah, literally. And I have to get an autograph after the after the podcast.
So Amelia, let's kind of start kind of at the beginning of 13 A stars at GCSE. Did you feel it was kind of easy to take the step from GCSE to A level?
It is quite difficult in the sense that GCSE, sometimes it feels like you're following a formula a little bit. You know, you've just got the list of facts that you need to revise, but an A-level is kind of a bigger jump in understanding. But in some ways, I really enjoyed it because compared to GCSE, where you have to do everything, at A-level, you're doing stuff that you really love. So even though it was maybe a bit more confusing, had to put a lot more work into it, I really enjoyed that kind of challenge of being able to learn more about stuff that I really enjoy. So yeah, it was good.
And in terms of the work level, even though it was a subject that you chose because I guess you enjoyed them, did you feel it was hard to keep on top of work, or was it almost a place where it didn't feel like work because it was so enjoyable?
I think the hardest thing with A-level was having to do so much more independent learning. At GCSE, you're kind of force-fed it a little bit. But in A-level, you kind of have to, you know, you get your free periods. But it's true, I did actually have to use them as study periods and do lots of work in those. But generally, I try to just keep a good routine, kind of 9 to 5, still do everything that I love in the evening. So I think having that good routine really kind of grounded me in terms of making sure I didn't overwork.
And did you continue that sort of 9 to 5 routine through preparing to actually take the final A-level exams at the end of year 13?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, because again, especially when you're revising, it gets to a point where if you're so tired that you can't focus, then what's the point in even revising? So it's again, kind of having focused revision sessions and then being able to relax in the evening really helped to kind of make sure I had the momentum to keep on studying for those last few months.
Nice. And Tane, since we last had our episode, you have done your Oxford entrance exam.
I have indeed.
Tell us about it.
For those of you who are listening in or didn't listen into the last episode, I'm applying to philosophy, politics and economics at Oxford, Somerville College specifically. And I had to take the TSA a week ago. And I think I can successfully say that's probably the most stressed I've ever been in my life.
Really?
It really does feel, and I'm sure Amelia can back me on this, it really does feel like your whole academic career comes down to 2 hours, which it kind of does for an exam like that. And for the quality of candidates applying for a course like that, everyone is exactly the same. So this is a test which allows you to stand out. I thought it was a difficult paper. I thought it was harder than previous years. I thought there was more time pressure. It was the first year that the exam was online. So that was a new element of having to deal with that. I'm not the fastest typer. So on section 2, where you have to write an essay in half an hour, I kind of wish that I was a faster typer. because I was kind of going with the one finger approach. And that's not ideal. But it was a brilliant experience. And whatever happens with it, I think I didn't fall apart in the exam. So whether I get an interview or not, I'm just kind of quite happy with how I dealt with it all. And obviously very excited to find out what does happen with the interview.
Which will be, when would you know that?
I think it will be late November. Okay. I'll find out, and then the potential interview will be in early December. So yeah, it's now is the fun part, I guess, because you've done everything you can do. You've done the TSA, you've set out your kind of, you've got your grades, you've got your personal statement, you've done the TSA. So now it's the ball's in their court now. Whether they want me to come and interview is up to them. It's not up to me anymore. And that's very reassuring. It's like closure almost. So I just get to sit and wait, and hopefully they come calling.
It's a waiting game. Yeah. Amelia, you graduated this year, 2024. So is that still a fresh memory for you? Can you still remember back to taking your entrance exam?
Yes, it definitely doesn't feel that long ago. And I completely agree with the feelings that you're going through, you know, you're kind of in suspense about what's going to happen. You've submitted your application, but still a lot of unknowns. And yeah, I also did the TSA as well. So definitely, yeah, can appreciate like how hard you found it. I definitely found it tough as well. And again, I feel like it's one of those things where you put so much pressure on it and you always feel like you've done a bit worse than you actually have done. So I'm sure it will work out well for you. But yeah, definitely some tense time.
And what was the waiting? What was the waiting like? Because obviously Tane is going through the waiting now. How did you deal with it? Was it affecting you day to day? Was it in the front of your mind? Like, how did that work?
I think it was just always in the back of your mind. And I think also, you know, people asking about it and wondering when you're going to find out. And then you put a lot of pressure, like you have to kind of play it down, being like, oh, well, I won't get in anyway. So can you stop asking about it? That kind of thing. So it definitely is. It's more just kind of a little niggle in the back of your mind. And again, especially when you have so much other work to do, it's that kind of extra pressure to keep on thinking about. Yeah.
Do you want to follow up with them?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, actually, when I found out Amelia was going to be a guest on the podcast, I contacted her and asked her for some TSA help, actually. So she actually did do a few sessions with me online, practicing the TSA. So if I do fail, I will be blaming it on you.
A lot of pressure then.
But yeah, I completely back up what she said. I think that waiting is sometimes the worst bit. And I can't wait for that first offer to come through. And it's like, at least one university wants me. Right now I'm still on zero offers, but
doesn't mean anything though, right?
Yeah, it's not a competition of who gets an offer first. It's who gets the offer in the end.
So choosing Oxford, was it somewhere that you, because obviously the way Oxford entrance works, it's very different to the majority of universities, I think, in the way that you do have an entrance exam that you've got to sit. There is an interview process and things like that. So you're already, if you want to go to Oxford or Cambridge, already you know that you're going to have to go through those sort of, you know, trials, as it were. Was it always a dream of yours to go through those trials? Was Oxford always top of your list?
Not necessarily, actually. I went to a school where I didn't even really hear of Oxford and Cambridge at all, and nobody I knew was applied there or anything. And it was only really when I was doing my A-levels, I went to a sixth form college where there's a bit more experience with applying to university, that one of my teachers actually suggested, oh, you should go for it. And it was only then where I kind of realised it was a possibility that, oh, maybe I could apply and it wouldn't be a completely lost hope. But I think around the end of year 12 is when I definitely decided I want to apply. And then it was like a good way to take on a new challenge, I think.
And so end of year 12, you kind of made the decision. And do you think, so end of year 12, which would have then meant if your exam, you would have actually done pretty much at the beginning of year 13. Did you feel you had enough time to prepare for it?
Not really. And to be honest, again, because I didn't really know anyone who was applying and my teacher said that I shouldn't worry about it, I didn't really worry too much about it and probably only did about 2 or 3 practice papers before I sat it. I think looking back and also my friends at Oxford, I realized that I probably should have done a bit more. I kind of didn't worry too much about it, which I think looking back is probably the best way to go. I think it was the interviews that I was really scared about.
Okay, and talk me through the interview.
Again, I was so nervous. I was shaking beforehand. And again, because I was in person interviews when I did it. So like I was looking around at all the people around me. I'm like, wow, these people are all geniuses. They're all so smart. They're all winning at Bananagrams. And I was like, that's it. Like, and there's no chance for me. But I was so surprised when I came in that both my interviewers, they were just really chill. Like they weren't like old scary professors. They were wearing like jeans and a t-shirt with a gold chain. They were like speaking very like, you know, relaxed and said, you know, cool things. I don't know. I was very shocked. And also what they were asking me was mostly A-level stuff. And then they just kind of took it one step further. You know, you kind of hear those horror stories of interviews where they pull something out of thin air and you're like, how on earth are you meant to answer that? But I got none of those kind of surprise questions. It was more just kind of, again, following on from concepts I was already aware of, which was actually, it was actually really fun. I went out of it and being like, wow, that was a really fun conversation. Great 20 minutes. Mm. So again, before and after was like a completely different perspective on how interviews were actually in reality.
So did you come out feeling, you came out feeling positive, but I guess, did you want to buy into the idea that, you know, it could be an offer, or did you kind of come out being like, yeah, I've got that.
Oh, definitely not. Like I made like a silly maths mistake in one of them. I made loads of mistakes in all of them actually. And so I was like, you know, it's a really good experience. I spent 3 days in Oxford. Okay, I can move on with my life now. But I thought that was it, to be honest. But again, it was quite interesting talking to my now friends who I'm with at Oxford. We all made loads of mistakes. We all made similar mistakes, actually. And I think that's the point of an interview. It's not meant to be that you're 100% perfect. I think they more want to see how you think and how you respond to challenges, which I think is really interesting. So again, you think that the only people who are going to get into universities like that are like 100% geniuses, have been like excelling ever since they were born and just like were meant for it and like lived and breathed academia. But in reality, it's just people who are interested about their subject and just normal people, which really surprised me.
So there's hope for you yet. Yeah. How does that make you feel, you know, hearing that?
Yeah, I think the interview process, obviously I've tried not to let myself think too much about it, but I think it definitely sounds terrifying. Being in a room with two people who know their subject inside out, have published books, articles, journals about things that you want to study. And you know, you're always nervous about how you present yourself. How do you want to come across? Do you want to come across confident? I hope you want to come across confident, but not arrogant. Yeah. And one question I did have is, did you find that the questions they asked you were similar to the other people in the room? Or did some of your friends get one question which you didn't? Or was it different for everyone? Or was it the same?
It was the same questions for everyone, I think.
So wait, it's a group interview?
No.
Oh,
but,
okay, cool.
Everyone else who interviewed got the exact same questions.
Oh, really? So probably like they've got a list. I suppose that makes it fair, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because from what I heard, because I went for the Oxford Open Day a couple of months ago, and one of the PP students showing me around said that they changed the questions for the students, and there were like certain questions they'd ask certain students based on maybe their personal statement. But then there was also other people who've said that it's the same for everyone. So I think that kind of ambiguity is what makes the Oxford interview so scary. You can't go in knowing, right, they're going to ask me this, this, and this. And it's also not one of those interviews which is like, oh, we just want to see if he's a good guy. They want to see that they can really stretch you and that they can really kind of challenge you. And I think one of the things that someone told me is that whatever your answer is to a question, they'll tend to disagree with you. And you're nodding, so I'm assuming that's probably right.
Too much about that?
I guess it's different depending on the subject. So I think because a humanities interview, they're definitely going to disagree with you. But in chemistry, it was more like I'd say something and they'd be like, why? And then I'd give an answer. They'd be like, but why though? And they keep on asking you questions until they're sure that you really understand it. So, and you're not quite sure, like they don't really say, oh, that's right or that's wrong. They just kind of like, okay. And they kind of move on, which is slightly terrifying, but it's also good in a sense, again, because it's like you're actually getting to talk properly about something that you really like. And it's like, it feels like a conversation. It doesn't feel like a panel interview where they're just, you know, question after question, they kind of respond and then say, oh, what did you think about this? And you're like, oh, actually, oh yeah, that's a good point. And then, you know, they actually help you as well. I was also surprised by how much help they gave me in the interview. And it wasn't just like an awkward silence if I didn't know something, that they, you know, they want you to do well, which again, you know, they're normal people. They don't want people to fail. So yeah, that was quite a good aspect, which I didn't expect at all.
And were they, did you go on to then be taught by those people, or are there separate administrators who do interviews, or are they actual tutors?
They were my tutors for the whole 4 years. So yeah, that was also a good experience to know if like I would like to, you know, them to teach me as well. But and by the end of my 4 years, you know, we're quite close. Like, you know, you get to know them really well because you have these tutorials with only two other people in the class. So yeah, it was a really good experience to kind of have the interview with them and then spend the 4 years just being taught by them as well.
You had a question about tutorials, I think.
Yeah, I think with tutorials, I think it's such a novel concept, which obviously is not at many universities apart from Oxbridge. What was kind of, you know, it's obviously not like a sixth form class, but what is it like? Is it like, you know, the professor stands there and you make notes, or is it a conversation? Is it more of a debate? Or and does it... I'm asking lots of questions here, but does it change based on the subject? So would a chemistry tutorial look different to maybe a history and French tutorial, for example?
Yes, it would definitely differ between subjects. I think humanities, from my friends who I know, had similar tutorials. It was like a debate. It was a conversation, and they maybe picked through an essay that you'd written that week. For me in chemistry, it was going through problem sheets normally. But again, it was very kind of relaxed. Normally the tutor would stand at the front by a whiteboard, probably in a room similar to this. So you just kind of sat on sofas and everything. And what was really great about it is because again, it was only three of you in the room, you could ask so many questions. So it wasn't like a lesson where you have a lesson plan and that's what you're going to do today. In tutorial, it's very, you know, changeable depending on what you don't understand and what you want to talk about. And I was definitely one of those people at school where I was quite scared to like put my hand up or like contribute in class and stuff. And it was completely different atmosphere in Oxford, where they kind of, whenever I asked a question, my tutor would be like, great question. Like they loved asking questions and kind of also being stuck themselves. They loved it. Again, it's a completely different learning environment compared to at school where you feel like you can only be right or wrong. But at university, it felt like, oh, it's okay to be wrong. It's actually really interesting to be wrong and then learn from it. So yeah, it was very different to classes and A-levels.
And because that's such a different learning style, did it take you a little time to adjust to that? Did it take you a little time to warm up to that process of learning?
Yeah, for sure. Again, I feel like with GCSE and A-levels, there's so many exams that, you know, that's all you think about the whole time. You don't necessarily think about the whole learning experience and enjoying learning. Obviously, I did enjoy learning, but it does kind of feel like, you know, full on at A-levels. But so it was really good at university to kind of just sit back and enjoy my subject a bit and be able to tailor my own experience to what I enjoy rather than just learning from a syllabus. I could ask questions that I was really interested in and have a one-on-one conversation with like a top professor about it. So it was really great in terms of kind of changing my mindset about that. And isn't necessary about the exams. It's about, you know, your own interests.
And how does the sort of exam timetable, as it were, work there? Is it very different to school? Do you do one exam sort of at the end of a year, or are there multiple exams throughout the year? How does it work?
Yeah, so it's quite different compared to other universities, but compared to schools, it's quite similar that you only set exams that matter at the end of each year. So in the summer, you do mock exams at the beginning of each term, but they don't mean anything. And it also depends on the subject. So something like PPE, you only actually have proper exams at the end of the 3 years, which is kind of crazy. For me, I had to do, so first year doesn't count. I think that's pretty standard across all universities, but in my second, third and fourth year, I had exams at each of those years that all counted. But yeah, I think some of my friends doing humanities where it was all based on, you know, 3 weeks at the end of 3 years, it's like a lot of pressure compared to other universities where it's normally every semester. So like twice a year that they do exams.
Okay. And did you feel that there was any difference in the way that you would prepare for those exams based on ways you had prepared in the past for things like GCSEs, probably more closer to A level?
Actually, not surprisingly. I actually think my like working for towards GCSEs and A levels helped a lot when I came to revising for university. I think, you know, GCSEs and A levels is kind of just a tester period to kind of realize the best way that I learn. And so I kind of did a lot of flashcards and practice exam questions and things like that. So it wasn't too different to what I'd already experienced. It was actually, I felt a lot more confident revising for university exams because I knew what works and I knew how I learn and how much I can do in a day. So yeah, it wasn't that bad in that respect.
How does that make you feel about knowing that it could all come down to 3 weeks at the end of your third year?
I think that's... it sounds a bit similar to GCSE because obviously as an IB student, I've got 30% coursework in every subject. So I kind of go in, well, hopefully with marks in the bag, and I go into the final exam with a little less pressure. I think it kind of is more pressure, but also it's more of an opportunity to show your tutors what you've learned from the course. And especially from a humanities side, I think that a lot of the essay questions are so subjective and it's really an opportunity for you to like show yourself through them. And I think that that's one thing where there's always a little bit less pressure when you're presenting yourself than when you're answering a question which is either right or wrong, which I assume chemistry is more like than a humanities subject. Interestingly, about your workload, especially in the lead up to those big exams, is the Oxford workload, you know, is it significantly greater than A-level? Is it significantly greater than maybe other universities that you had friends at? Or was it a little less than everyone builds it up to be?
It's definitely more manageable than people think it's going to be. People expect that if you go to Oxford, all you do is work, which is definitely not true. It was quite similar to A-levels for me, but it's very different to my friends at other universities in the sense that it was kind of a 9-to-5. That's, again, I kept the routine 9-to-5. And so I'd have evenings free, but it'd also be 9-to-5 at the weekends. And that's mostly because of the 8-week terms compared to other universities where it's 12 weeks. So the work's a lot more spread out. So in Oxford, it kind of felt like, although I did have, you know, the evenings free, I'd then fill it with, you know, societies and spending time with my friends. So it was more like I didn't have time to do nothing compared to my friends at other universities who would have time to go home and just spend the morning watching TV and stuff. I didn't really have that amount. But again, it was very manageable. I never had to do an all-nighter, never had to get a deadline extension or anything. So yeah, it definitely isn't as scary as people make it out to be.
I mean, but 9-to-5 over across the weekends, is that Saturday and Sunday?
Yes. Wow. Yeah.
I mean, that kind of does feel like you're working all the time. You said it's not like
were
that.
Were there people, because I'm thinking about myself and I'm thinking that I'd quite like to, you know, on the weekends, you know, maybe visit home or go and do something in London maybe. Or were there certain people in your friend groups who didn't do the 9-to-5 and maybe did a crazy kind of 6 to 1 a.m. but that means that they could take the weekends off? Or were there people who had very different kind of work schedules?
So I think for humanities as well, because you have less contact hours, my friends doing humanities had a lot more flexibility in when they were going to work. And also some of my friends were completely nocturnal. Again, you get to work whenever you want. I think that's the hard thing about university as well, is it's completely up to you. So some of my friends enjoyed having that kind of massive cramming session the day before a deadline. For me, that just didn't work for me. But also, again, I say 9-to-5, but you know, I played a lot of sport and like football and rowing and things, which obviously happened during the day. So then I just changed my hours and be flexible with it. And that's also the nice thing. You know, if I wanted to go out for lunch with a friend, I could. So, you know, probably overall, it was still 9-to-5 each day, but I did have that flexibility to choose when works best for me. So it was nice in that regard.
And I think there are three terms, am I correct in that?
Yeah.
Is there one term which is like busier than the others, or is there one term which is maybe less busy?
I think it also depends on the subject. So some people have higher workloads in different terms. Obviously, I think for the last term, a summer term, is busy because of exams and things, but that's also a great term because it's actually sunny for once, you know, typical England. So again, I think it very much depends on the individual. Some of my friends only had like one course in a term and others had like three. So then it would, you know, they'd be more busy in others. Yeah.
And how many hours of tutorials, actual sort of like contact hours with your tutors do you have a week, roughly?
So for chemistry, I had about 2 or 3 tutorials a week, so 2 or 3 hours. But it was quite contact hour heavy because I also had 2 hours of lectures each day and 2 days of labs each week. So each lab being 6 hours long. So overall, I kind of had about maybe 30 contact hours a week compared to some of humanities students who had about 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. So it's very different compared to each subject.
And what's the difference between a lecture and a tutorial?
So a lecture, you're in a big lecture theatre. So I was with the other 180 people who did chemistry, and you'd have one person standing in front, you know, they talk about you, about a subject. But tutorial, again, it was just based on in the college. So again, my tutors who I'd met at interviews, and it would just be an hour with 1 or 2 other students as well, talking about specific topics.
And what happens in the labs?
So the labs, normally they were linked to the material that we were covering in lectures, and we'd have to make something, you know, loads of different things, because chemistry is either organic, inorganic, or physical. So sometimes we'd be using the computers and modeling atoms, and other times we'd be getting, you know, the horrible smelling chemicals and make some random brown liquid, you know, the
sludge.
Yeah, no, literally. So, you know, there'd be times where I'd get like 200% yield. I'm like, how have I done that? I'm just too good. I've doubled what I started with, you know, but it was really good. And again, it's that real practical side of chemistry, which I really enjoy as well.
Would you say, was the labs your favorite part of learning at Oxford?
Oh, to be honest, I was so stressed out in labs. It was really? Everything always went wrong. I think I really enjoyed it, but it was like 6 hours to do something which probably takes a bit more. And there'd always be, you know, I'd always spill something. I'd always like throw my product down the sink by accident. You know, the classic, you spend 3 hours making something for it to just disappear, you know. So it was definitely not the most relaxing experience, but it was definitely unique, I'd say.
Do you feel that you got better at it as you went through the years?
Oh yes, for sure. I mean, I was still making mistakes like in my fourth year, but at least I kind of knew what to do when I made the mistakes compared to first year, where I was just like, someone please help me. But
so your cleaning up got better
exactly,
as you went along.
Exactly.
That's cool. And in terms of like the reading, or like, because I guess a lot of people before they go to university are used to things like textbooks. You know, you've got like your A-level chemistry textbook. Abdullah was saying something really interesting in our last episode, where he said his learning style really suits the concept of, I have a textbook, I can take it home, I can read that textbook cover to cover, and I know that I will know all the content that will be taught to me. Is it the same at university in terms of, are you aware of what your curriculum is sort of at the start of your start of year one, and you can kind of map out where you need to get to? Or is it a bit more freestyle and a bit more wacky?
Well, I think with chemistry, it is basically like that with textbooks. So I knew exactly what I needed to learn. I knew that everything we covered in lectures would be something that could be examined on. So I did kind of, similar to Abzilla, do the process of just writing down, making flashcards on everything that I needed to know, and then just revising that. I know in other subjects, again, like PPE, it's endless what they could ask you. You know, like I think one of my friends who does PPE in her final exam got asked, what is an egg? You know, that was...
That's making me feel good.
Yeah, you know, like it's questions like that where they could just, again, it's very dependent on the lecturer for humanities. And some of them want to be really wacky and cool and ask some weird questions. So again, they could pull anything out of the bag. But again, I think throughout your degree, it's about getting those transferable skills, which means that when you're sitting in an exam hall, you can have an idea of how to start on that kind of question. But yeah.
So you've looked into your reading list, right? Or what your potential reading list would be. And I think you're a little bit kind of taken aback.
I think it's a lot, but I also think that it has to be, because not everyone doing or applying for PPE at Oxford has done politics, philosophy and economics. So for example, I've not done politics and philosophy. And while politics is pretty, I would say pretty easy to catch up on because, you know, I've spent time with looking at the A-level textbook. I spend a lot of time talking to A-level politics students at my school, trying to just make sure that I'm not drastically falling behind. Politics is also something that it's all around you. You just have to kind of just open your ears and engage with it. But things like philosophy are really, really difficult to kind of, you know, I wouldn't want to turn up to a university to study philosophy, politics, and economics, having no idea what I'm going to learn in philosophy. So I think, yes, the reading is a lot, but I also feel like it's justified. Like you need to understand it. And I've already started doing with one of the philosophy teachers at school, who also actually did go to Oxford. And she's already started helping me just gain an appreciation for formal logic and stuff, just in case, partly for the interview, but also since I'm applying to PPE at all of my universities, I'm going to have some understanding of philosophy. So it's just good to, you know, get those kind of baby steps out of the way. So I've got like a decent grounding in it. So it's not like a whole new subject, which is quite scary thinking that I'm going to turn up to a lecture having never studied the subject before. So you kind of, it's justified the reading.
So I guess that's why there's a big reading list, because they need to make sure that kind of everyone is sort of starting at the same level, regardless of whether they've been at a school where they could have studied A-level philosophy and things like that. Okay, cool. So you feel kind of good about it?
Yeah, I feel good about it. I'm not the best reader, personally.
What is a good reader?
I think, that's a great question. What is a good reader? I think
What is an egg?
I think a good reader is someone who, number one, reads quickly. Number two, is able to process what they're reading, but then have their own opinions on it. And I think that's really important, especially looking at the interview and personal statement and stuff. You know, the age old tip about personal statement is they don't really care what book you've read. What they care about is your opinions on that book and what you've picked up from it. So there's no point saying I've read this book and I thought it was great. It should start with, I read this book and I fundamentally disagreed with this, or this felt intrinsically wrong. Like that's what they want to see, because that's showing yourself and that's showing your own, the way you think and your kind of, you know, like intellectual capacity to debate, which for humanities is very important. How much you can debate in chemistry, I'm not exactly sure. But I think a good reader is someone who can read quickly, someone who can synthesize information, and then someone who just enjoys reading. PPE is reading heavy, so I know I'm going to have to learn to appreciate and enjoy reading. And people who enjoy reading then become very good at the first two because they do it so much. And I think, that's a crucial skill.
Are you a good reader?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I used to read a lot when I was younger, but I wouldn't say I'm necessarily well read. But again, kind of seeing my friends go through at university, lots of them were similar where, you know, they read a lot of Harry Potter when they were younger, but never had really read academic texts before. And they found it really hard to begin with, again, because it's just new. But again, it's a skill that you can definitely build upon. And I think people are sometimes quite scared about, you know, kind of reading these academic journals when you're used to just reading a textbook. But it's definitely something that you can work on and improve on. And you'd be surprised about how quickly you can get better at reading. It isn't something, you know, when people say, oh, I'm bad at maths, doesn't, you know, you can still improve at maths. You know, you don't put yourself into a box, I think is the important thing.
Yeah, I think with reading, I think that's a really important kind of implication that people bring. Reading fiction books is very different to academic reading. And I actually think, weirdly, I'm better at academic reading than fictional books. And I think academic reading requires you to really be 100% focused on what you're doing. And you have to have like some sort of notepad or laptop to kind of jot down really important things that you want to pick up on, research in more depth, or something which, you know, summarizes an entire chapter. Because sometimes you do get entire chapters which is summarized perfectly by one key concept or one key theory. And a lot of the reading I do for IB, especially for subjects such as economics and geography, which require you to engage with case studies and journals rather than just textbook learning. I think that kind of having your, you know, if it's the Financial Times, for example, and then having like just a notepad next to me, just any like maybe facts or anything really interesting, write it down. And then I've kind of got some sort of recollection of what I'm doing. Because the worst thing that can happen, I'm sure we've all been there with fictional reading, is you read a book and within 3 months, you've completely forgot what the story was. And in an environment like Oxford, but even at any other university, it's so important that you're actually learning and reading, not just reading. Because if you do it passively, then yes, you might spend 7 hours a night before a tutorial reading, but there's no point if you wake up and you've not remembered anything, is there? So I think that's really important.
Cool. In terms of exams, I've got a question here, which I think is really interesting. Because now you've been through it and you've fairly fresh out of it. What advice would you give to someone preparing to go into their final year at university? Is there anything that you think students should be aware of, or anything to do with coping with pressure or anything like that? You know, if you could give any advice to someone sitting finals, what would you say to them?
I think firstly, like, be consistent with how much you work. So don't just wait until the last, you know, 3 weeks before an exam to start revising. If you do a little bit every day, then, you know, you'll realize how quickly you can improve on something. I think secondly is to get a good routine. Again, I found that really important, that I knew that I was going to start working at 9 and at 5 p.m. I'd pack away and forget about it. Again, because it's one of those things that can cause so much pressure. It was quite nice having that separation. And I also really loved studying in libraries and cafes, so not my room. Again, don't work in your room, because again, it just then becomes a place of stress for you. So again, I felt like as soon as I walked out of that library, that was me done for the day and I could actually enjoy something. So again, I think revision especially is a bit more of a marathon than a sprint. You need to have enough energy in the tank to get to the end. So otherwise, again, I kind of fell into this mistake in my second year, especially. I worked so hard throughout the year in order to do well for the final exam. But then by the time I got to exam week, I was so sick. I was so tired and I couldn't keep focused. And it was just about survival that week, getting through it. But I felt like if I'd paced myself a bit better in the weeks beforehand, then I would actually have gone into the exam week feeling a bit more fresh and, you know, ready. So again, it's all those things like sleep and eating and things like that, and how tired you are, that makes a big difference on exam days. So again, just kind of carefully planning how you're going to, you know, plan your days in order to make sure that you still have time to do the exam and, you know, actually remember well on the day. So yeah.
And you mentioned that was the experience you had in second year. Did you then make alterations for years 3 and 4?
Yeah, so in third year especially, so that was when I took the bulk of my exams. I, again, made sure I only studied in libraries and cafes, didn't go anywhere near my room. And again, I actually took evenings off. Again, I felt like I felt very guilty in the previous years for taking time off, because I was like, oh, but this is time that I should be revising. This is productive time. But again, it isn't productive time if it's 9 p.m. at night on a Saturday or something and all your friends are doing something and you're missing out. No, you know, you have to prioritize your well-being. And also things like exercise, I think, really helped. Forcing myself to go for a walk if I had a bit of a mental block, and not feeling pressure on, you know, oh no, I have to stay here because I said I was going to be here. It's actually, doing a 10-minute walk can make you twice as productive once you come back.
On that welfare point, I think you had something that you wanted to talk about in terms of welfare.
Yeah, I think, it's an interesting question. And I think one of the kind of stereotypes of Oxford is, of course, we've talked about the workload. I think, I don't know where I read it and I don't want to miss source or misquote, so I'm going to keep the source private. But I read that the kind of mental health has been a big kind of topic that Oxford has focused on in the last 4 years. Do you think they do a really good job of kind of looking after the well-being of students? Do you think they don't do a great job? Do you think that the Oxford lifestyle leads to difficulties with mental well-being, or... you know, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I do feel overall, at least from my experience, they look after students well. I think it's quite hard because most people who go to Oxford are people who are used to being at the top and they're used to being, you know, succeeding at everything and not really having any problems. So I think when you go to a place like Oxford and you might be average, then that can like be a big blow to people. And also, again, they just put a lot of pressure on themselves to work all the time and be a perfectionist. But I think the really good thing about Oxford is the college system. So, you know, you're separated into your different college where it's about 100 people in a year. And you know everyone within that college. You know not only your tutors, but you know the porters who are like basically security guards. You know the chaplain. I'm not religious, but the chaplain, we got along well. And you know the cleaners who are around, all the people, all the staff and stuff. So it kind of feels like a big family, which is really nice. So it isn't like in other universities where you might be a bit anonymous. You know, if there were days where I was, you know, had a hard day, then someone would ask me, are you okay? Like you'd have people who know your face and actually say, you know, do you need any help today and that kind of thing. And they were also very good with, so we had peer supporters. We had a college counsellor. So just for my college, the chaplain was also a welfare person. There were also people who were on 24/7 duties. So if you ever needed help in the middle of the night, like if you were feeling unwell, need to go to hospital or anything, there'd be someone there in college to take care of you. There was also a university counselling service that you could call at any time, and also a phone line that you could call at any time if you needed help during the night. So again, I feel people have different experiences with that, of course, but I definitely felt like I knew where to turn if I needed help. And there was always a friendly face who would, you know, look after you. And even, you know, just for friends you make as well. Like you make such a close knit group of friends that I always felt like, you know, I could go and knock on someone's door and have a chat about them and with them, and it'd be great. So yeah, I feel like, you know, that you read those headlines and it can be quite shocking, but it doesn't really tell the whole story.
Yeah. I think the college system, from what I understand, leads itself to those, like you said, close knit friend groups, because you've kind of, well, at least for Somerville College, I think they only take 7 PP students a year. So that's kind of 6 other people you're definitely going to be friends with, because they do the same subject as you and they'll probably be in your tutorials. And I think at bigger universities, it's quite easy to sometimes, you know, I'm thinking about London, it's sometimes a little bit easier maybe to just get lost in kind of everything that's going on. And especially with not having that close knit tutorial or the collegiate system, sometimes you can get a little bit kind of flustered. And I think one thing I noticed also at the Oxford Open Day is the students showing us around, and also Amelia, I think, shows that, is they're very kind of honest about their experiences. I think that's quite a difficult thing to do, because at a university like Oxford, you've basically got the best and brightest minds, and the incidence of mental health problems you would expect to be different to other universities. But actually, you know, we've just seen the range of support they have. It definitely seems like, you know, as a year 13 looking forward and potentially ending up at Oxford, it does not seem like I'm going to be completely alone in the fact that I'm going to be surrounded by people who are all probably, I'm going to think, smarter than me. But like you said, they are just normal people, normal students like yourself. And that's quite an important thing to know, that you're going to be kind of surrounded by people who are there actually looking out for you and not just trying to get, you know, the top grade in the finals. And I think that's a really good thing.
So I think, you know, people in the year above you who are now in their first year at university, does that stack up to what you've heard from those? I know we're only like half a term in, but does that sound familiar?
I think definitely. Yeah, I know. I think a lot of the people I've talked to who have just gone into uni have mentioned that it's a little bit like having to decide who you want to be, because you're suddenly surrounded by people who you've not known all your life. For example, I've been at the school I'm at for 9 years. So everyone knows pretty much everything about me now, including the teachers. And suddenly you're going to a place where no one knows your name, no one knows your story, and you've kind of just got to completely reinvent yourself. And I think some people kind of figure out by, you know, October, November, that they're not actually the person that they want to be. They've kind of just become other people just to make friends. And I think that that's a really difficult place to be, because you have to be confident in saying, this is how I want to be. And if people don't like that, well, then I'm not going to be friends with them. And I think that's a really difficult thing to do. And especially at a university, unlike Oxford, where you're surrounded by about 50 to 100 students wherever you go, You don't really get that chance for those tutorials to learn more about the people you're studying with. Because I imagine in the tutorials, yes, you learn a lot about the tutors, but you must have learned quite a lot about the students you were with.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the other chemists in my college, especially, like, they're my best friends, you know. Yeah, I grew really close with them. So yeah, it does make a massive difference being able to study so intimately together.
And were you aware of what Tane mentioned there about sort of almost like learning about yourself or finding out who you were? You know, I imagine it's quite a big, particularly when you said that you weren't even aware that Oxford existed. It didn't seem like you came from a school where that was kind of like put on students, or they kind of plucked students out that thought, oh, Oxford or Oxbridge or whatever. Did you have a sense at all of feeling out of place when you joined, or did you find it was quite welcoming straight away?
Everyone was very welcoming, but I think I kind of fought myself. I kind of told myself that I didn't belong there, you know, kind of massive imposter syndrome kind of thing. And that wasn't based on anything else or anybody else. You just think, you look around and like, they must be so much better than me. They look at them like in the library, they're focusing so much. I'm just, you know, I can't focus at all. Like, I'm so rubbish. Like that kind of thing where you just put yourself down. And it took me several years actually to kind of really be like, okay, no, I do actually belong here. And it isn't, you know, I'm not super dumb or things like that. And I think especially what you're talking about is about in terms of your identity. I think that's what's, you know, great about university is being able to again really find out, you know, what's important to you. Again, because I feel like at school I was kind of labeled by other people as a smart person or a person who like likes academics and stuff, that I didn't really know much about myself outside of that. So it's actually really nice going to an environment like Oxford where I, you know, I wasn't any different to anyone else in that respect. So I was actually, no, I'm a sporty person, you know, or I enjoy talking about this, and things. And it's really a great opportunity to think, you know, beyond the boundaries that you kind of are put upon at school. Because again, at school, it is so much focused on exams, and that's great. But it doesn't give much flexibility in being able to explore other areas that you might be interested in.
So what would you say to someone, who's gone to a university, you know, it could be Oxford or Oxbridge or any university, where they are struggling with that sort of imposter syndrome, as you said, who might be feeling a little bit lost, a little bit unsure of who they are, do they belong there? And what would you say to someone who is having those sort of like almost like internal doubts?
I think the first thing you can do is speak to anybody, any other student, and I'll assure you that they're thinking the same thing. Like, again, you have a quick conversation, you realize that everyone is comparing themselves to other people and think they're doing rubbish. And that almost helps in a sense, being like, okay, I'm not the only one. And I think secondly, again, kind of in terms of finding your people, I found joining societies and clubs being great, because then I'd meet people who, you know, kind of like me, you know, people who, you know, I was really into like football and stuff. So I met other people into football and I was like, oh, that's great. They're just like me. And they're also here, you know? So it's really nice being able to find people who you can relate to. And then it kind of, again, kind of grounds you a little bit. Because again, when university, you're moving to a completely new place where you might not even visited before. And so again, just finding some kind of home comforts and, you know, people and places can be really useful in terms of feeling like you belong a bit more.
And in terms of the sport, do the different colleges play sport against each other? Are there sort of like matches and stuff?
Yeah, there are. So it kind of, what's also good about Oxford especially is because you have college level sport, which, you know, even if you're absolutely rubbish, you can do. And then there's also uni level sport. So I was the captain of my college football club, and that's probably the proudest thing out of my whole university experience. And, you know, we topped the league, you know, we got won the cup and stuff. And, you know, that was, you know, such a great experience in order to play, you know, with other colleges. But, you know, I got really close with that group of people, and, you know, it's across the years as well. That's another thing different from school. You know, you're friends with everyone in the college, not just your year or who's in your subject. So that was, yeah, a really great experience.
Oh, so you won the cup.
Yeah.
All down to your captaincy,
yeah,
I'm
course,
sure.
Of course, yeah.
Do you think you'd take up any sport while you're at university? Or continue sport?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I would probably, I go to quite a sporty school right now. So I basically played every single sport that you can think of. I think the ones that stand out to me are cricket and tennis. Two ones that I definitely want to continue. But like Amelia said, I'm very keen to play at a kind of fun level rather than a very intense level, because I think we can all agree that as soon as you add a bit of pressure, then suddenly it's not as fun anymore. And especially in an environment like Oxford, I can imagine that in the classroom, there's obviously tons of pressure. But then if you've then got a university level sport, that's even more pressure. Mm. And you know, that collegiate system sounds absolutely amazing. And you know, already I can tell because you started smiling straight away that it was clearly a fond memory. And I think sport is just such an amazing way to just meet people as well. It's something that kind of everyone does or has done at one point. So yeah, they're probably the two that I'd probably single out, but always open to trying new sports, you know. Might become like a tiddlywinks player.
Darts.
A little bit of darts, who knows? Yeah. But yeah, looking forward to university sport, definitely.
Were there any like weird sort of traditions or anything like that? No,
there were loads.
Oh, really?
There were so many.
Are you allowed? Is there like a secret code you're not allowed to talk about?
No. I mean, the weirdest one, which is it's on Ascension Day. So firstly, you walk around all the other colleges with a whole bunch of primary school children with sticks, and they bang the walls of certain buildings.
What? Yeah, sorry, yeah. What am I in an alternate reality? Yeah. Say that again.
Wait, go again.
You're with children.
Yeah, so it's like primary school kids. It's like the beating of the bounds or something. And so you walk around and they sing this like little chant. Yeah. But anyway, that's only the first half of the day. Second half of the day is so Brasenose students, which is a college I was at, they get let in through a secret door to our neighboring college, Lincoln College. And the secret door is only open for 15 minutes every year on this day. And then in Lincoln College, they give you ivy-laced beer.
Ivy?
Yeah, it's like laced with ivy. So apparently it tastes disgusting.
Well, like as in the plant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the primary school kids come back and the Lincoln Choir sings on top of a tower, throws out pennies, and then the little kids collect the pennies. And that all happens on one day. And again, like, I literally cringe at it too, because I'm like, how is that even real? Like, it's so weird. But it is quite a weird experience to be part of, like when you're going through a little secret passageway to get your IV beer at like 12 p.m. on a Thursday. So it's loads of weird things where I'm like, how is this even happening? But it was funny to be a part of. And everyone else is like, yeah, this is not normal. So
do you just take part in that on your first year, or do you then have to do that for the following 3 years?
It's every year, yeah.
Every year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How would you feel about getting involved in something?
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out.
Do you have any weird like traditions at your school?
I'm trying to
like
think.
Like sporting maybe or anything?
I don't really think so at our school. I think house singing is definitely one, which is probably a bit different. House singing usually is seen as quite a civil kind of classy event at other schools, and at our school we've got half an hour of kind of barbaric chanting and abuse being thrown around, and unfortunately this year I had a couple of jobs to do, so I couldn't actually join the chanting. And I remember one bit I love about the house singing is I'm pretty sure that the teachers always know it's going to happen, but they always don't want it to happen, as we always do the school chant at the end. So usually what happens is like the head of school gives a vote of thanks, and then the lead music teacher will say thank you all and have a great night. And then usually like the rugby captain will stand up and he'll start the school chant, and then you've got all these boys on the balconies and they just go absolutely crazy, and it's absolutely amazing. And the hall that we do it in has got like a really, really deep ceiling, so the echo of the chant is like bouncing around. And it's absolutely surreal. Wow. To be a part of.
Sounds kind of like tribal in a way. Like.
It's absolutely amazing. But I'm trying to think of other, are there any like weird initiations at Oxford?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think maybe some of the sports clubs do crazy things.
Nothing
like,
for football or rowing?
Not under my captainship. Okay. I mean, the same in other universities. Sometimes they make you do funny stuff when you join clubs and societies, but there wasn't anything too bad. There was, so there's like a matriculation ceremony where you have to like wear the gown and cap and stuff, and then you go through into the Sheldonian Theatre, and then the Chancellor chance Latin at you, and then you're officially part of the university. So that's quite a good day. And then people, you know, go punting and everything. So
how Oxford.
Yeah, I know. It very is. And especially that's like 2 weeks in. So that's kind of a real like initiation of being like, wow, yeah, this is a strange place. But yeah, nothing too bad that I've heard of.
Did you get involved in, does Oxford do Freshers Week, or is it a couple of weeks, or how does that work?
Yeah, they do Freshers Week, and there's like Freshers events, which is all really fun. And again, it's a, you get to know your year so quickly. Like I knew everyone's names of my year by the end of that week. I think compared to other universities, the downside is that you do get set work during that first week.
Oh, really?
So people were still doing essays in Freshers Week, which is kind of insane. But you still had lots of time to chill, and you had like the typical inductions about, you know, how the food works and how the library works and things like that. So
sorry, how the food works?
Like, you know, how you pay for it. Oh, okay. You know, like in what apps, like you have to download. Or? Yeah, canteen, yeah, oh, and okay. Stuff. You know, you have to download the app and like upload money and things like that. So yeah, the kind of the more admin kind of side of things. So it's good to kind of get all that sorted in the first week. But yeah, I don't think maybe Freshers Week is slightly different compared to other universities, but everyone still has a great time and goes out five nights in a row. So it isn't like...
So I guess on that point that we sort of spoke about earlier about that mental health thing, saying, you know, someone who might have imposter syndrome or someone who might be feeling uncomfortable, I guess maybe you would say is like, really engage with Freshers Week, because I guess it's the only time where everyone in your year is probably feeling exactly the same as you. And that's your opportunity to go out and meet people. And
yeah, know. I mean, everyone wants to make friends, and everyone's really nice. And also, you know, I'm not necessarily a massive fan of nightclubs and stuff, but there were other opportunities to meet people, which is more chill, like arts and craft night and board games night and things, a bit more wholesome. But, you know, there was lots of, you know, you don't have to... You know, lots of people might come into uni having never gone out before and might feel quite insecure about that. But again, that's not a problem at all. There will definitely be people who are just like you and don't want to participate in those kind of things. And there's always going to, you're always going to find those people. So again, kind of having courage that there is a friendship group out there for you.
Now that you've just turned 18, are you going to warm up your going out ability before you go to university?
I'm not sure. I think currently the IB, as we've discussed on previous episodes, means that my going out ability is severely minimal. Yeah.
Hampered.
Yeah. I think it's something that, you know, as Amelia's just said, I think everyone's going to be a little bit different. Everyone's kind of going to have different experiences going into it, but I assume that kind of knowing that other people will be in similar positions, and also for people who don't drink, people who, you know, maybe are religious, and there's going to be so many different groups, and it's kind of nice to just kind of be able to just go in there and, like I said, just decide to do things my way, and you know, whether I want to be a person who goes out three times a week or goes out every night a week or doesn't go out at all, it's nice to know that I'll definitely have a group who will have, you know, kind of similar experiences.
I suppose on that, money's a bit of a factor, isn't it?
Yeah, how is, in terms of, because I know obviously London gets that rep of, and rightly so, because by the way, I went to London yesterday and I went to a nice little cafe and tried to order a coffee, and the cheapest one was £7.50, which is absolutely ridiculous.
That's crazy, isn't it?
So yeah, we just left.
We just walked out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. £7.50 for a...
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
No.
how is Oxford with, did you feel like compared to other universities, it was cheaper, more expensive, or how was it?
I definitely think it is cheaper, and that's something that people are often surprised by. So firstly, the fact that you only pay for rent during the term time, you have to move out during the Christmas and Easter and summer holidays. So that is a bit annoying to move in and out, but it means that the rent is a lot lower. And then secondly, the amount of bursaries and scholarships that are available are crazy. And because there's kind of a rule where you're not meant to work during term time. And so if that's ever a problem, then like my college was really generous with the amount of bursaries they gave. So I had a lot of bursaries given to me for sport. So, you know, I could afford to buy a new pair of football boots, and I could afford to pay like for rugby membership and things. And also when, you know, for one reason or another, I, you know, found it really difficult to find ends meet, they'd often give mini bursaries just, you know, within a few weeks' notice. So I never felt like, oh dear, like I'm going to run out of money and I can't pay for food. So it was really, really good. And especially some of my friends who came from like lower income families, they were on like a crank start scholarship, which is worth like £10,000 a year. So again, there was loads of support for people. And there was never a reason why I couldn't do something, especially like society wise. So yeah, I was actually very much surprised about how much cheaper Oxford was compared to my friends at other universities. And, you know, obviously London can be crazy as well. But yeah, definitely there was a lot of support out there.
So on the not having a job, was that actually, is that a rule that you are not allowed to have a job?
Yeah, it's a rules. And I think, to be honest, it makes sense. Again, I was saying I did 9 to 5, like every single day of a week. Like if you had tried to do a job on top of that, then it'd be pretty impossible. I did a bit of tutoring during my term, but mostly I worked throughout my summers. And the summer's like 3 or 4 months long. So, you know, you can get a big amount of money behind you through working then. And because we have the mock exams at the beginning of each term, I felt I couldn't work during the Christmas and Easter holidays because I spent my whole time like revising for like all the content. So during the term, because it's only 8 weeks long, you're just trying to get the work done. And then only in the holidays can you then have time to revise and properly look through all the materials. So yeah, you definitely couldn't do a job on top. But then again, that didn't limit people. They still had enough money to live off.
Wow. Okay.
And one other question on the rents. How was the accommodation at Oxford? Does it vary between colleges? Is it pretty kind of like standardized between all the colleges? Is there like, is it kind of a ballot system or are all the rooms the same? Or
so it's very dependent on the college. So some of them are like newer than others. So some of the accommodation is more modern. So I went to a relatively old college. And so it meant that all the rooms were unique, you know, like you'd never have like in other universities where you have like a whole building full of exactly the same rooms. They were all different. And it was banded A to F, with A being the best and F being the worst. And you could choose what band you wanted depending on like what money you were willing to spend. I think maybe the bad thing was that there weren't many ensuite rooms. You basically didn't get an ensuite. But then some rooms you'd have a massive room and share with the bathroom with like 5 other people. And other times you get a smaller room, which was the same price, but then you'd only share with 1 other person. So it's kind of very dependent. You could choose what's important for you. And again, so my accommodation, because it's quite old, it's an old building. So, you know, maybe it wasn't like, you know, walls were quite thin and like things were cracking off sometimes. And, you know, again, because these were built like hundreds of years ago, but then you'd get these amazing views as well. So, you know, kind of all balanced out well. And it did work on a ballot system as well. But again, because everyone was within the same kind of, you know, 100 meters squared of each other, then, you know, maximum your friends were 2 minutes walk away. So it was never really a problem. And the accommodation, again, was generally pretty good. So, yeah.
And I mean, forgive my ignorance, but is there like a wing for the girls and a wing for the boys, or is it all just everyone in together?
Yeah, everyone's in together. Okay. I think there was a female only staircase that you could choose to be a part of as well. But yeah, generally all mixed. And it was quite weird as well, because in some of the, so it works on staircases rather than flats, again, like typical Oxford thing. But some of your rooms would be next to the tutor's offices. Oh, which is really strange. So that would sometimes lead to funny stories of people bumping into their tutors in the corridors and stuff. So yeah, definitely kind of has almost a weird boarding school aspect to it, where you kind of have like your canteen where you all eat together, you have a common room where you all hang out together, and then you're bumping into your tutors like next door to you. So it's definitely like a weird experience in that sense. But yeah, generally I was always happy with my room.
If there was anything you could change, like about your university experience, like is there anything that you would do differently if you were to do it again?
I think the main thing is not comparing yourself to other people. Again, I kind of talked about it before, where I just felt like I must be so much worse than everyone else. And I spent way too much time thinking about that, especially in first year when you're kind of getting to grips with things. So again, kind of, you know, being sure of yourself and that, you know, you got given this place for a reason, and that you are smart enough to do it, and that you don't need to spend all your waking time doing your subject in order to be good enough. I mean, I was really happy with the amount of societies that I joined, and I'd recommend anyone joining university to, again, at least sign up for one society, even if they're really nervous or have had no previous experience. Like, it's the best way to meet people. So yeah, no, apart from kind of, overthinking, there's nothing else that I'd really change about uni.
Nice. Well, that's pretty good.
And on like a wider point, obviously Oxford going there on the open day a couple of months ago, it's like, it's just breathtaking. It's like, you know, all the students walking around have got the same kind of wide eyes looking up at the dream spires and stuff. And it really is, you know, you see pictures, but when you're there, you realize that that is so true. Did that ever wear off as a student? Did you ever kind of just, was it just a new norm by like the second or third year? Was there still that kind of childish like awe and fascination of almost gratefulness that you're able to study in that area?
Yeah, no, it never goes away. Not at all. Like, I think I've got, you know, of my college, which I lived in, I must have like 100 photos and standing in the exact same spot. Cause like every time I walked past it, I just like, I need to take a picture of this. And also going to the libraries, like they're amazing. I felt like, you know, I was visiting a museum when I was going and studying there, and it felt like a proper day out. And just walking around again, like I always felt so grateful. And yeah, never goes away. And yeah, again, I think I feel like I'm looking back, I've appreciated every second of it. And yeah, no, it was a lovely place to study in.
That's cool.
So what do you think, and this is like, maybe you could base this answer as well on even friends of yours who maybe studied at completely different universities and things like that, but now you've gone through it and you did 4 years at university. So, you know, I'm hoping you kind of, you know, you know a lot about it, but what do you think a successful university experience looks like? What do you think people should aim to get out of university?
I think it's a really interesting question. And kind of like looping back to what Tane was saying at the beginning about kind of finding more about yourself and what you want, what you like. I think that's the biggest thing that I've taken away from university, about kind of owning the fact that, you know, I really like doing, you know, sports, and I really like spending time outside, and I really like spending time with my friends, and kind of getting those values. Because again, I think university gives you a really good, you know, good few years to kind of evaluate what you want to do next. You know, it's kind of a stepping stone. So it isn't all about getting that first class or whatever, or getting, you know, the best grades, or, you know, getting into the top university, like football club or whatever. It's a lot more like about a well-rounded experience and kind of learning about yourself. So I think, you know, kind of taking that opportunity and trying to squeeze as much out of it as possible is what I'd say is a successful university career. Again, just making the most of everything and grabbing opportunities with both hands.
Not taking it for granted.
Yeah,
kind exactly. Of staying in that sort of feeling of like just wonder and joy of it all, and throwing yourself into literally everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask, Tani?
In terms of, you know, obviously Oxford is an absolutely phenomenal institution and is, you know, at minimum in the top three of all of the rankings. Do you feel like, obviously I'll ask you in a bit about what you're doing now in a post-Oxford world, but do you feel like Oxford has set you up with all the skills you need to achieve what you want to achieve? And did they give like a lot of support for kind of future careers? Because obviously Oxford is kind of, well, Oxbridge is more related with research. And I know you didn't go down that route. Did you still feel like you had the skills you needed to go down the other route?
Yeah, I mean, the teaching is very high quality, and I feel like, especially in terms of chemistry, I feel like they've set me up pretty well, which is good. I feel like I've got quite a well-rounded knowledge on chemistry. The careers service there is also really good, and I participated in quite a lot of the like schemes and opportunities that the careers service offered. So that's really good. Again, I feel like everyone's experience at any university is unique. So, you know, again, it's about taking the opportunities that are available to you. So some of my friends were really into going to finance ways, but so they joined all the finance societies. They took part in talks and seminars and lectures and all those kind of things, which, you know, Oxford like gives you the option for, which I think is really, really good. So again, I feel like you can really tailor your experience to where you want to go, which I think is the great thing about university in general. You know, it's up to you. You know, you can take what you want from it.
Awesome. Yeah, and what are you doing now? What is next for Amelia in a post-Oxford world?
So I am actually a chemistry teacher now. So it was actually something which I only kind of fell into in my fourth year. So again, kind of in terms of thinking about what my values are, I felt a lot of pressure actually for university to go down more traditional routes of what my friends were doing in terms of like law, consulting, finance, PhDs. It's basically what all my friends were doing. And it took me those kind of 4 years to realize like, actually, maybe I'm just following the crowd. What do I actually enjoy doing? And everything, again, looking at the societies I joined and kind of the mentoring I did, I realized that I actually, firstly, love talking about chemistry. And then secondly, I like working with younger people and children. So I was like, you know, it makes sense for me to become a teacher, and I'm really loving it so far. So again, I think that's what the university offers you, is the time to kind of evaluate what's actually important to you and what do you want to get out of your degree. So yeah, that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Awesome. Nice.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No, not really. I just, yeah, if there was
now's like, your chance.
Yeah, if there was like, I mean, not only for me, because obviously I'm kind of towards the end of my Oxford application journey, but for people who are thinking about applying to Oxford, for people who are going to apply to Oxford next year, what's kind of like reflecting on your kind of journey into Oxford rather than at Oxford, what's like your one biggest piece of advice for people who are in the position where they've said, yep, I'm going to do it. I'm going to apply for Oxbridge.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, apply. I think so many people don't apply because they think, oh, there's no point. Like, I'm definitely not going to get in. And I felt the same. I'd no way in a million years that I think I'd get an offer from Oxford. And, you know, just applying is almost the biggest hurdle for lots of people. And then secondly, I think, at least from a chemistry perspective, learn your A-level syllabus. So I thought I had to read all these extra chemistry books and read all these journals and articles and newspapers and watch YouTube videos and stuff, which was really fun. I loved doing it. But when it came down to the nitty gritty of the interviews, it was my A-level content that actually really helped me. So again, kind of going back to basics and kind of revising what you already know, maybe looking ahead to all of your year 13 content, I found really useful, at least for applying for sciences. And I also think getting used to talking out loud as well. It's not very natural for you to speak in an academic way out loud. Like normally, you know, I would never talk academically beforehand. I just talked to, you know, about Love Island with my friends and things like that. So, you know, getting used to, you know, sitting down with a teacher or maybe someone else who's got similar interest and kind of discussing a topic that you're interested in can be really useful to, again, prepare yourself to articulate your thoughts in either an essay or in an interview.
Awesome.
It's a really interesting idea and thought, actually, because you've got those tutorials, as Amelia was saying, that they're small, they're tight knit. You know, you said 4 or 6 people, I think it was, or something.
Yeah, 3 people.
3 people, wow. So actually you've got to be able to learn to express your thoughts on an academic subject, which you just would probably never get even in A-level, really.
Yeah, or definitely. IB. I think everyone has ideas, but, you know, Oxbridge just kind of wants to teach how to articulate those ideas, I guess. And it can be really kind of frustrating sometimes, I guess, when you have like lots of ideas, but you're losing it in translation when you say it. And I think that's such an amazing skill that Oxford teaches you, that, you know, it's amazing cultivating, you know, the thought processes you need to get ideas, but also they teach you the importance of actually being able to kind of bring words to the ideas and express the way you feel about a subject in a kind of, you know, like you said, an academic register, which is, I imagine, is going to be important wherever you go. In teaching, it must be very important. But even if you did go the consulting or finance route, you have to talk about,
your subject.
Yeah, you have to know. And knowing the subject is one thing, but there's no point knowing it if you can't talk about it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. Great. Well, Amelia, oh, thank you so much for coming in. It's been amazing. It's cool, actually, because if you think about it, we started at GCSE in episode 1.
Yeah.
We talked a bit more about A-level and IB in episode 2, and now episode 3 is here, and we've had someone who's gone through 4 years of an amazing, you know, sort of experience at Oxford. And I think I've certainly learned a lot as well about it. I really like the traditions. I think the traditions are pretty
nuts.
Wacky,
that's so weird.
thank you so much for watching, guys. I hope you found something interesting in all of that. If you do have any questions, feel free to leave them in the comments section below if you're watching it on YouTube. If you're listening to it on Spotify, you can't do that. Sorry about that. Maybe check it out on Spotify, on YouTube, and then you can write a comment underneath. But if you did enjoy the video, and you want to see more of our episodes, they will be up on the screen somewhere floating up here. Please subscribe to the channel if you're interested in learning more about what we do at Mastering Education. Leave a like on the video if you liked it, and we'll see you in the next one. Thank you.
Thank you.